Welcome to Earth Matters, environmental justice stories from so-called Australia and around the world. Produced at the studios of 3CR on Wurundjeri Woiwurrung country in Naarm, Melbourne, and broadcast across the continent via the Community Radio Network. I pay my respects to elders past and present of the Wurundjeri Woiwurrung, as well as the Yuin Nation on whose beautiful country I produced this episode, and of the many lands our content reaches. I recognise that sovereignty has never been ceded, and I affirm that there can be no environmental justice without justice for First Nations people across the globe. I'm Mia Audrey.
There are so many aspects of ecocide and genocide that we feel powerless to change. I suggest that we should remember that our money is within our power, that divestment is a tool of the masses that has already forced significant positive change and will continue to do so in the future.
By now, it's clear that the climate crisis is a crisis of imagination. We know what got us here. We know what we need to do about it. We can see and sense the urgency of changing course. But we are stuck in a web of stories about what's possible, about who we can be, how we can relate to the living world that sustains us, about who gets to shape the future and what that future will look like. Voices outside the web are picking at the knots, opening other ways of being through different, older stories. This is the work of artists. And while you may not know it from how your tax dollars are spent, artists are a lifeline for our world in crisis. Enter A Climate for Art. Since 2023, ACFA has been building momentum as a collective of artists, arts workers and organisations intent on mobilising their sector for climate action. ACFA's primary practical aim is divestment, cutting ties between arts and the vast network of banks, superfunds and power companies that prop up the fossil fuel industry. In February 2025, in partnership with NextWave, City of Melbourne, George Payton Gallery and Climate Action Network Australia, ACFA held a symposium on Wurundjeri Woiwurrung country, featuring thinkers from the arts, academia, activism and climate campaigning. This show features two recordings from the event, which together give a glimpse of how our biggest imaginations are responding to the climate crisis. Later, we'll hear from Barkindji artist, writer and curator Zena Cumpston about the disaster unfolding on her country and what it has to do with your superannuation. But first, here's Dr. Jacina Leong, an artist curator, educator and researcher who draws on her long career in arts and cultural leadership to discuss burnout, labour and the climate crisis.
I'm going to weave together some thoughts today around the intersections between or the connections between burnout, labour and climate crisis. So I'm going to start by sharing a reflection with you about a workshop I attended in late 2018. This reflection describes my experience of Air Flesh, the title of one of four workshops that occurred as part of the Anthropocene campus. The Air Flesh workshop commences after lunch in a room 12 floors above the Birrarung or Yarra River in Naarm, Melbourne, once a site of many rich wetlands, now buried beneath the feet of the city. On entry to the room, our workshop facilitators ask us, a group of artists, climate activists, anthropologists, sociologists, to take our seats around pre-arranged tables and to introduce ourselves before inviting us to participate in a series of warm-up exercises. In the first, we remain seated, closing our eyes as they guide us through exhaling and inhaling on the natural rise and fall of the breath. For the second, we're asked to breathe walk around the room to the rhythm of our breath, our eyes softly open as a steady asynchronicity emerges in the room. For the third, we stand still, extending our arms to make physical contact with the person either side of us by connecting our palms. Together, we're asked to breathe in and to breathe out. As we do so, one of my neighbours turns to me and whispers, "Those types of exercises make me anxious. I'm asthmatic." Our facilitators go on to explain the purpose of the Air Flesh workshop. Amidst the violence of the Anthropocene, they begin, surprising opportunities for corporeal generosity are emerging. Conspiracies from the Latin con, meaning together with, and spirare, meaning breathe, or the breathing of air together, are starting to disrupt conventional forms of politics and sociality. Recently, I've returned to my experience of the Air Flesh workshop and ideas of breathing as a metaphoric device to think about spaces of shared breath in my work as an arts worker, as well as the breathlessness experienced through burnout. Burnout, like disrupted breathing, signals an overwhelmed system, one that is depleted, struggling to self-regulate, and in need of restoration. Just as chronic stress can lead to shallow, constricted breath, unsustainable work conditions constrict our capacities, leaving little room for renewal. Burnout isn't just about being overworked. It is also not just mental or emotional. It's physiological and systemic. It's about the deep exhaustion of being caught in relational, economic, and existential systems that demand constant extraction without replenishment and treat human and more than human life like infinite resources, commodified, optimized, and exploited until they break. Burnout operates on a logic of debt, using up future resources to sustain the demands of the present. It's also not just something we experience. It's something that we're conditioned to override. A few years ago, I experienced an incident of hemiplegia, a condition that causes weakness, or in my case, temporary paralysis, on one side of the body. The paralysis was the result of an accumulation of chronic stress. After this experience, I made a promise to myself that I would stop chasing the burnout, as it were. That I would forget this promise so soon after is no coincidence. When you've been trained to push through exhaustion, that pattern doesn't just disappear after a crash. Your nervous system, as we know, remembers the demand for overperformance, even when your mind knows the harm. This is why just knowing better doesn't stop us from repeating burnout. The pattern is embedded at a deeper level. Burnout is structural. This work isn't just to remember, it's to collectively reimagine what else is possible. We live in a world where rest, as Tricia Hersey reminds us, is treated as a temporary recharge for more productivity, not a fundamental right. Even when we recognize the harms of burnout, the logic of extraction pulls us back. Work deadlines, expectations, the guilt of slowing down. Perhaps if we truly remembered every consequence of burnout, we might find it unbearable to continue participating in unsustainable systems. Perhaps these systems, and I'm referring here to heteropatriarchal, ableist, colonial capitalist systems, need us to forget so that we keep moving, keep producing. This forgetting isn't a failure then. It's an adaptation to a world that has not made space for repair and renewal. So how do we interrupt this cycle? When the dominant culture constantly nudges us towards burnout, what other kinds of relationships, rhythms, and spaces can pull us back into awareness? I want to return here to breathing as a metaphoric device, and instead of a device to think through the breathlessness of burnout, a device that allows me to think more regeneratively. In their article, Breathing Climate Crises, Blanche Verley and Astrida Nymanis remind their readers that it's through breath and respiration that vertebrate bodies inhale oxygen, transport that through our lungs and blood to our cells, and produce the energy needed for core functions of living, such as eating, removing toxins from our bodies, creating and renewing cells, and so on. Not all species breathe as such, but all have their own processes of getting oxygen into their cells, using it to make energy and returning carbon dioxide to the atmosphere. In their article, Verley and Nymanis trace the breath, as it were, to put forward the concept of a conspiratorial form of witnessing climate change. For Verley and Nymanis, no one body can know the entirety of climate collapse through their own breath. As with other climate injustices, climate-induced breathlessness is starkly differentiated. To fully bear witness to climate change, we must be a conspiratorial witness, witnessing from and with many bodies together, with different knowledges, different archives, different experiences. This demands curiosity and care for the situation of others, as we then start to notice patterns, choke points, repetitions, and absences. Here, Verli and Nymanis point to breathing as both an individual and a collective act, one that can be disrupted, constrained, and made precarious, and also one that is also a rhythm of exchange, an act of giving and receiving, of sustaining and being sustained. The interplay between work, burnout, and climate crisis are not separate issues, but entangled systems of the same extractive system. Colonialism established the blueprint for extraction, treating human and more than human life, land and labour as resources to be used, controlled, discarded. Capitalism industrialised this extraction, turning it into an economic system where growth is mandatory, no matter the cost. Echoing recent research by both the Climate Change Adaptation Lab and also Francis Flanagan, Flanagan makes it clear that if work structures remain unsustainable, they will only amplify the pressures of a wide range of direct and indirect impacts of climate change. For Flanagan, then, addressing climate change necessitates rethinking not just how we respond to climate change, but also requires a fundamental transformation in how we work, how we relate, and how we sustain one another. In doing so, as we learn to rethink our relationship to energy on a planetary scale, Flanagan also invites us to reconsider how we expend our own energies. What if burnout and climate crisis aren't endpoints, but moments to forge new relational and systemic pathways? Caring in and through our practices is not supposed to be easy. To do so is a practical labour that requires space, cooperation, and relentless application. Only then can shared spaces of breath offer the possibility, as Bonaventure Endicking suggests, to open up the cracks and caveats of our work that we might not have explored until now. Inevitably, this might mean not only attuning to systems and structures that need repairing and restoring, but where necessary, decomposing and transmogrifying institutional practices that no longer serve our collective futures. Echoing Lisa Barrister, perhaps then what we need to do is develop and deepen our conceptual understanding of modes of cessation and interruption that are not synonymous with inaction. This entails noticing what time suspension looks like as everyday forms of careful attention, the offer of staying with or alongside a situation that is unresolvable in the now, of sitting a situation out, going over the same ground. It also entails ceasing to prop up European models of time that come to dominate the world political present and the temporal structures that are ongoingly enacted through colonization, exploitation, and extraction. I would like you to think about what this time might be asking you to metabolize differently, to pay attention to opportunities for corporeal generosity, to opportunities for shared breath that necessarily disrupts conventional forms of politics and sociality. And there are a few questions that I'll invite you to think through. What labours are worth sustaining? What labours are necessary for repair, for renewal, regeneration? How do we value and organise this work? And what needs to change? And how might we do so at different scales, at different tempos, at different rhythms?
Dr. Jacinta Leong, Chair of RMIT University's School of Art Industry Advisory Committee on paying attention to the stories about labour and time we live by. You're listening to Earth Matters, Community Radio's National Environmental Justice Program. We're hearing voices from a sector often overlooked in climate crisis discourse, the arts sector. A Climate for Art is a campaign to address this, bringing artists and arts organisations together for critical climate dialogues, with a focus on divesting from banks and superannuation companies that support extractive industries. At their symposium in February 2025, Barkindji artist, writer and curator Zena Cumpston spoke passionately about the need for divestment, detailing how superannuation-funded agriculture is wreaking havoc on her country and the communities that call it home.
Niall, I'm Zena. I'm a Barkindji woman from with Afghan, Irish and English ancestors, all of whom I'm proud to carry in my blood. I'm so grateful for my mixed heritage. My ancestors allow me to see many aspects of life through disparate lenses. I'm proud to be a mongrel because it gives me superpowers, most especially because people tend to catastrophically underestimate me. And that is the dog that you want to be in any fight. I work as an artist, writer, curator and consultant. My cultural obligation to my homelands and my community is the foundation of all of my many projects, always. My homelands are in Western New South Wales. My mum grew up in Broken Hill, but originally my family came from Wilcannia, a town on the Barker, which some refer to as the Darling River. Our name Barkindji means the people of the Barker. We see this waterway, our life blood, as our Namaka, our mother. And without it, we would cease to exist as a people, because every aspect of our culture and lives is tied to this waterway in an unbreakable matrix of belonging and reciprocal care. I honour those from who I am descended, and especially those who have fought tirelessly for our Barker. I extend my love and respect to Wurundjeri community on whose lands I live and work. They continue to honour their cultural obligations to fight for their country and their cultural landscapes. The pressures they face as traditional custodians of a massive city are immense. Their resilience and commitment to future generations deserves much more respect, resourcing and care. I am in awe at the grace they show in managing the ongoing violence of colonisation and the incursions on their lands and the gentle and generous pragmatism they show despite too often being thrown mere scraps. Today I want to open thought and discussion about your personal accumulated wealth, your money, your lump sum, your nest egg. As I say this, I'm sure many of you immediately scoff at the very notion that you have any money to speak of, let alone a lump sum or a nest egg. Perhaps when I clarify that what I want to talk to you about is your superannuation, many of you will agree that you do have a lump sum, however little. So often we do not see our superannuation as real money that is ours and accumulates steadily over time. And more than that, is actively being used and invested in an endless cycle. This money is perhaps pie-in-the-sky stuff that most often for me never really registered as something that I own and control. I guess mostly because in truth, I wonder if I'll even live to retirement age. A very real consideration for many Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people. My own mum never saw hers, despite working hard her whole life. I personally have worked jobs for much of my life that didn't pay my super properly. So this deficit discourse I have in my head about how little I have and how much more I should have in my super also plays out in my thinking about it as anything real or worth considering. Significantly, while we fail to really see it for what it is, real money in large sums that is being continuously invested, we also lose sight that much of this money, our money, no matter what superannuation fund we are with, is often used to fund a broad range of industries that enact ecocide and genocide. In the last few years, several events coalesced to make me begin to think differently about superannuation, and I want to share a little about this with you and encourage us to think about what changing the discourse around superannuation on a personal and societal level could affect. Too often the onus is put on us as individuals to look after the environment at a micro level, to recycle, reuse, etc. Much of this push to make the individual responsible is a tactic employed by those who are doing the real harm so that attention and resourcing is taken away from what must happen to affect any significant outcomes, which is the high-level structural change. However, with super, I see that it's something that we can all actively engage with on the micro level that has a huge potential to change things on the macro level, the structural systems that are doing too much harm. My dear friend Helen, whom I grew up with and is and always has been a dedicated climate warrior, her son Leaf Indigo Taylor Justin began my journey in properly understanding the power of my super. Leaf voice that we each have power to change the world for the better. He was driven by his convictions and his love of this earth and its creatures to bring awareness to issues causing climate change and habitat degradation. In March 2021, at just 21 years of age,
he set out from Adelaide to cycle solo and unsupported around Australia's Highway 1 to promote the need to divest from polluting industries. Leaf embarked on his pilgrimage with a mandate to speak to as many people and communities as he could, to encourage everyone to change their superannuation fund to one that does not invest in fossil fuels or polluting industries. Leaf taught people that more than $3 trillion are invested across all Australian super funds, and that each of us can use the power of our money, however big or small, to make a real difference. Knowing so many are focused on their own safety and security, often more than the greater good, Leaf also shared studies that show that ethical superannuation can outperform conventional funds. Tragically, as he cycled across the Nullarbor on Tuesday the 6th of April 2021, Leaf was struck by a truck and killed. Today, Leaf's family continues his legacy through the organisation that they have set up called Change Your Super. After Leaf's death, I started reading and researching more about superannuation and found information that really brought home, literally, the harm superannuation investment is doing to country. In this case, my Barkindji country. Our Barker, or the Darling River, is the longest waterway in Australia at 1,472 kilometres long. It has been ripped from and abused since the beginning of colonisation and has been integral to the proliferation of many lucrative and highly damaging agricultural industries, the most catastrophic of which in recent times have been cotton and almonds. Our Barker has had weirs, dams and diversions and every violent incursion you can imagine imposed upon it in order to extract as much as is possible for private companies to make obscene amounts of money. Within the last 20 years, almond-growing land in Australia has increased by 900%, with much of this growth having occurred in the Murray-Darling Basin. Almonds are now Australia's most valuable horticultural export, bringing in more than $750 million worth of export revenue in the 2022-23 years alone. However, almonds are also the most water-intensive crop. A 2020 analysis by Victorian researchers published by the Journal of the Science of Food and Agriculture showed that 1 kilogram of shelled almonds in Australia carried a water footprint of nearly 7,000 litres. That's more than 8 litres for a single 1.2 gram almond. Almonds also create monocultures, as all other plants are eradicated by the vast amount of harmful pesticides that must be used to ensure their productivity. They use and kill more bees than any other crop. Because they require so much water, they are grown along waterways, and the barrage of chemicals required to keep them producing runs directly into our rivers. To allow crops such as cotton and almonds, which require alarming quantities of water, to proliferate along waterways already under so much pressure and in danger of being lost is difficult to reconcile. That so few people know of this travesty, of the irreversible damage it is causing as they happily sip their almond milk lattes, is maddening. The devastation wrought on my homelands by the destruction of our Barker is difficult to properly express. Our Barker has become an algae-filled mess. It often goes dry in many areas, and now regular cycles of millions of dead fish floating to the surface has been a dystopian horror show for my community and all who live along the Barker. Uncle Badger Bates, our Barkindji elder, in his submission to the Darling Basin Royal Commission, he states, "We show politicians and water people all the dead fruit trees and dead vines, dead veggie patches, the tourist boats high and dry in the empty lakes, and ask why, but get no answer. In Wilcannia, we would like to have some businesses that depend on water in the river. One is tourism. My people already run a successful tourism business at Mwadawindji National Park, but we can't do it at Wilcannia now because most of the time the river is dry or has pools of toxic water with signs up everywhere warning people not to go near the water or catch fish or yabbies. We would like to do some other business such as bush tucker and bush medicine, but we need a little bit of water to get the plants started to do that. We have a farm just near the town and it has a small water licence, but there is no water to pump. It has all been pumped up. This lack of employment has huge social effects on the people of Wilcannia. People turn to grog and drugs because they're so depressed, having no work and seeing the river the way it is, and not even able to go fishing or swimming. Our elders are passing away and young people committing suicide because they are so sad. The boom in almond plantings in the Murray-Darling Basin has been led by big business. Australia's largest almond grower is Canadian Investment Fund, underpinned by superannuation monies called PSP investments. PSP have about 12,000 hectares under production, followed by ASX-listed Select Harvests, which grows about 9,000 hectares of almonds. Many other investment funds have been expanding their investments in almond orchards. Investment companies and multinational conglomerates are buying up massive tracts of land directly on waterways right across Australia to exponentially increase almond production, and superannuation money is funding a lot of it. There are so many aspects of ecocide and genocide that we feel powerless to change. I suggest that we should remember that our money is within our power, that divestment is a tool of the masses that has already forced significant positive change and will continue to do so in the future. What are your barriers to taking control of your super to ensure that you aren't funding a genocide or ecocide? How can we work together to overcome these barriers, both individually and as a powerful collective of people, to get these messages out to our communities and enact divestment and refuse to lend our money to companies and corporations that cause harm to people and to country?
Barkindji artist, researcher and curator Zena Compston, demanding we take control of our finances to halt ecocide on her country and beyond. You've been listening to Earth Matters, Community Radio's national environmental justice program. I'm Mia Audrey. We've heard from two among the many concerned voices within the arts sector speaking up about climate. Dr. Jacina Leong, an artist curator, educator and researcher, reflected on how extractive and insidious stories about labour, value and time feed burnout culture. And Barkindji artist, writer and curator Zena Compston shared how through our super funds we are complicit in desecration and dispossession. In the show notes for this episode via 3cr.org.au/earthmatters, you'll find links to their talks in full, as well as others from the A Climate for Art Symposium. If you're an artist or arts worker, you can join the ACFA campaign by visiting aclimateforart.com.au. And to read more about Leif Justham's bike ride and the campaign to change your super, head to leifjustham.com, leifjustham.com. Thanks for listening. That's all for now. But tune in next week for more environmental justice stories. Earth Matters would like to thank the Community Broadcasting Foundation for their financial support and the Community Radio Network for getting the program out to you. Earth Matters is produced in the studios of 3CR, NAM, Melbourne.